Good evening, everybody. My name is Nick Mulger, and I'm the publisher, and I change this often. I'm the founder and the publisher, sometimes I say I'm the director, whatever, of Uklanga, a poetry press based here in Cape Town. It is my absolute honor to be able to introduce Douglas Reed Skinner, who is the author of our 8th single author collection, and our 10th book in total. His new collection is called Liminal. It's Douglas's 7th collection in total. His publishing history goes back to 1981. I've known Douglas for about 3 years now, and he's been a good friend to me over the past 3 years, and it's been my honor to publish this latest collection. Douglas was born in Uppington in 1949. He was the director of the Carrefour Press in the late 80s to early 90s, as well as the editor of New Contrast in the early 90s. Now he's the co-editor of Stanzas, and has for the past 3 decades been a great force in South African poetry. Tonight, Douglas is going to read from his new collection, Liminal, and a few poems from not his last collection, but the collection before that, Blue Rivers. Thank you again to Elise and to Augusta from David Crit Projects. It's our 5th event here, and every time it's really fantastic. So thank you very much, and please give a warm welcome to Douglas.
Thanks to Nick for taking the book on. Publishers come and go, and Nick is an exciting young publisher in Cape Town of poetry, which tends to be the neglected art form. And so more power to him and his future in publishing poetry. Most of all, I'd like to thank my sister for the image that she provided. It's a drawing. That's a print of the drawing, which I asked her to bring down from Port Elizabeth so that we could see it in slightly larger form. And that's for the cover of Liminal. So thank you. I'd like to begin with a poem from Blue Rivers, which came out in, I think it was 2011 or 12. And the poem is called Fragment, or Fragment. And one can read it through either meaning. And it's a poem, and I'm beginning with this poem because it sets up a particular thread of poems that lead in to the collection Liminal, which is the new collection. And it's a poem which addresses faith and the act of faith involved in writing. It deals with the fiction of organized time and how that fiction of organized time, underlying all of our narrative structures of being and personality, creates a fiction out of us. It also looks at the way in which poems are a kind of letter, and a letter to no one in particular, but to an anonymous reader. And that anonymous reader is some person out there with whom you have a fleeting but opaque relationship. The poem also hints at the emotional tenor of Franz Kafka's writing and the sense of slowly building panic or doom which inhabits particularly his short stories. So the poem Fragment is a letter from Kafka to Rainer Maria Rilke, the great German poet, which was written by Kafka from Prague on the 24th of July, 1922. Fragment, or Fragment. By my last count, our house has at least 14 clocks, one for almost every mantelpiece, and despite my rushing back and forth from room to room, there seems no way to get them to agree on just what time it is. What house would allow me to see them all at once? It's maddening. A chart with lines from every face to a common center places me inside a wall. How strange. Even when I assemble them in one room, in the kitchen, say, and turn their keys and move their hands until they seem to be in utter harmony. No sooner are they back in place than I must face the same dilemma as before. How can I know that still they run as one, each counting off second and minute at precisely the pace of all the others? It is impossible, and nights are sleepless worrying on it. The debate goes on incessantly, and I remain uncertain just which of them should have my faith, if any. Now, the truth of the poem is that actually Kafka and Rilke didn't know one another. They wrote at the same time in Europe. And so the poem creates a fictional letter and a fictional notion of what Kafka might have written to Rilke. And so one of the things it purports to say is that poems actually are a fiction. And that sort of leads into, through various byways, an attempt to address various comments by writers in the middle of the century when they had a grasp of what modernism in poetry was doing, and that it was beginning to explore the business of poetry itself. What was this business of writing poetry? What did the act of writing a poem really mean? And of course, that's much like trying to understand a brain. You can never quite get outside to look in, or the self, or the software of a brain. And so writing is the same sort of problem. And so I'm going to read a poem from Liminal called Writing. And it looks at things like you have to get lost before you are found. The parable of the lost son is hinted at. How we construct an inner map of the world. So that the act of writing is also the act of constructing its own possibility of meaning, so that the poem can be meaningful. That's being written. Writing. We never quite knew what we wished to describe. A kind of countryside we thought we understood, but had never been to. Imagining that if only we could get there, could reach that place, if only we could return to where we'd never been, the place for which we'd longed, the place we had desired for the longest time. And if only we could inhabit that house, walk on those fields, the ones filled with flowers, with all the scents we thought we could recognize, that we could remember, but for which the words would always elude. And it's true, there were times when we felt elevated, balancing high on an ancient ridge of eroding rocks and boulders, the wind whipping leaves and twigs all around. Times when we believed we'd arrived at exactly that place, the one that we never knew until we were there, until we had found ourselves in the place to which we'd always been heading, without knowing where, without chart or review, the one we had always known, but had never been to. So then we move to an even more self-conscious act of writing, a poem which is called Instructions for Writing a Poem. I find often when there's a problem in my life or I need to solve an intellectual idea or come up with an answer to something, the best thing is to actually sleep on it. And often the next day, by some miracle, the answer is almost there. So it's saying to the unconscious mind, you go ahead and do it. And I think there's an enormous amount of that involved in writing. You really have to get out the way as a self to allow the writing to come through. So this poem is called Instructions for Writing a Poem. Let me dream a small poem, he said to himself. Let me write one tonight, in a dream while asleep. I'll need a dream pen, and I'll need dream pages, he said as he sat on the edge of his bed. If I'm lucky, he thought, this time the dream poem will arrive as a whole, written out and complete. And then all that would still be needed of me is copying it down onto a dream sheet. So before he lay down, he decided he had better write out instructions for the poem as a list. Then when I lie sleeping, lost to the world, dream arm and dream hand will know how it fits. So he wrote down a list of the lines that he needed, what words he would use and where they would go, before lying on his side, curling up in the dark, as the day's old concerns drained out of his head, and the sheets were covered with falling black snow. Okay, so then we move on to another little edge of self-awareness in the process of writing. And this time the poem is called, and it really addresses how things mean and how things mean through the structure of stories. For the poem is a kind, it employs a kind of allegory of in an attempt to raise a poetic meaning to answer what the title presents to the reader. So the poem is called, If You Think You Know How to Write a Poem, Think Again. The poem has other ideas. She was never home when he knocked on the door, so he'd walk through the narrow gap in the hedge and around the back, cupping his hands against the light and trying to see in. The curtains were always drawn. He'd hang around, smoke a cigarette, watch birds fussing in the undergrowth, hoping she would remain faithful, with eyes for him only. His incantations never had much effect. She frequently moved elsewhere. He was never sure of her address, would look for weeks in other villages and towns, all along the shore, in houses in the forests that climbed up mountain slopes. He could never be quite sure what form she would take. Could have sworn one time it was her, half hidden by leaves, sitting on a branch and singing mournfully, repeating the same phrase over and over, hour after hour. When a cool onshore wind came off the evening ocean, he would wait for her touch, for his skin to tighten and prickle in the air. The moon left him breathless. It was her face. She could be any of the myriad myriad stars. So he kept on wandering and knocking, tapping on windows, whistling to himself with little conviction, even less success. He never bothered with prayer or penitence or scourging. Though a nearby dove intoning the whole repertoire of melancholy could keep him filled with loyalty to the invisible, to looking and waiting day after day for the snap of a twig in the shadows, warm breath in his ear. So that leads in a roundabout way to the issue of memory, the issue of writing and memory, and the issue of writing an actual life and the conversion of memory into writing, and the contest between writing and life, for you cannot write unless you live life. But if you're living life, when do you get time to write? So you end up in the strange, you become a strange kind of cannibalizing your own life. So the poem is called Looking Back. Looking back, those relatively rich acres of time, days, turn out to be ephemeral, small spaces that keep on falling straight out the backs of our heads, as if in their passage they shed not the slightest trace. Walking in the half-light between seasons, between night and day, half-formed shadows resemble what you recollect when watching a lone blackbird combing the lawn like a desperate mind, trying to look back. You know you could record it all on ivory, smoothed-out pages with a licked pencil and the quiet engines of muscle, but that would require more inattention, not less, because you'd be busy doing only that, in a fervid sweat, under ramping pressure, to record it all ad infinitum, unable to rest, while less and less is seen to happen and more gets written, nothing in evidence except the steady scratching of a nib. And by the time the light has begun to drain into the landscape's western edge, you would find yourself stranded with only a fraction done, a state of panic setting in and the sound of your heart battering you into submission. Okay. So we head back to Blue Rivers and addressing the problem of to whom one writes. And this poem was triggered by my reading of an interview in the New York Review of Books. And it was John Coetzee was being interviewed, and he was asked the question, and this is back in the 90s sometime, and he was asked the question, well, to whom do you write? Who do you write for? Which I guess is a question that many writers get asked, and there's no simple and easy answer to that question. And John's answer was, I write to the beloved, which is a kind of non-answer, but I'm sure that John had a particular sense of how he was answering. For months, I puzzled about this. What did he mean by the beloved? And eventually, this was my answer to what he meant by the beloved. And my kind of answer to whom does one write? And one writes to the beloved. Beloved, how on earth can I say it out loud? That which is always just beyond reach. The tongue a closed hand without the required dexterity to handle such pressures of speech. For exactly when we entrust to language what we meant or we mean, it disappears. The theatre emptying as though on fire. And except for that ghostly cast of old fears that crowds the air and attends each minute, we are left to wander, lost in the mist of where we've been and all that we did, fading annotations on a lengthening list, the body's blind passions rendered in ink. Yet you are undimmed, all the books in which I would wish to spend my days, were I able to choose, and your looks are precisely the reprieve that I take to be what I want each time that I wake.